This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jadson as always. Mark, we are almost through with February, which means we're getting dangerously close to what I think is going to be the start of good movie season.
I think you're right. You know, over the past couple of years, a lot of studios have really unveiled some of their biggest movies and put them smack dab in release of March. So I think, you know, we're going to really start to see some good movies, but, you know, probably some good box office movies too.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a nice mix next month. It's going to be, you know, we've got kind of like a giant kid-friendly movie. There's going to be maybe the most anticipated horror thriller movie of the year coming out. We've got a superhero movie, so it's really going to hit on all levels for all audiences. So I think it should be a really good way to get the you know, movie market back on track.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that.
So exciting stuff. We are going to dive a lot deeper into what March has in store later on in the show. But to start, last night was the biggest awards, you know, moment or event for movies out there with the Oscars. So in lieu of doing the real news today, I think we're going to do kind of a deeper dive into, you know, a recap of the night. We'll touch on some of the surprises and snubs and some of the crazy moments that happened. And I think with that, we can probably kick things off.
Let's do it.
Mark, as I mentioned, I didn't watch the show, unfortunately. Was tied up last night with some work stuff. So I don't know if you want to kick things off here with maybe, you know, a few things that stood out to you for what you saw.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get to the, you know, the big five that everyone knows, you know, the Oscars for: picture, director, actor, actress, and supporting. So I guess technically that's big six. But, you know, I think the main thing going into the show was everyone really wanted to see just how the Oscars would be carried out with no host. You and I talked at length about, you know, the Kevin Hart, him being removed, being reinstalled, ultimately being, you know, removed from hosting for good this year.
Right.
And it happened so fast that they didn't really have time to, you know, input another host to take his place. So that was the thing that stood out to me. And to be honest, I don't think the show missed a whole bunch, you know, being hostless. They had a couple stars, you know, paired up as they usually do here and there that, you know, kind of led the direction, so to speak, of the entire show. But, you know, I think it really did benefit. I think the pace overall was a lot better than what we've seen in the past couple years. And the humor, the forced attempt sometimes to, you know, make a crowd laugh. I didn't get that a whole bunch, and I was appreciative of that. I think that, you know, there's just a lot more focus on the you know, performers and the performances, and not so much about, you know, trying to get this joke in on that person, etc.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I can't think of the last time that I saw an Oscars host that, you know, really blew me back. And I think it, you know, kind of gave a unique opportunity to, you know, have all of the songs that were nominated for Best Original Song give them the chance to perform at the show, which was, you know, seemed like a pretty cool way to go about things. And, man, honestly, when I think of hosts, you know, one of the best things that I had ever seen was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, they opened the show and they had, like, done a kind of a mashup of Billy Crystal when he was hosting. They had cut him into a bunch of different movie scenes that had been released. And it was really funny. I thought it killed it. It was kind of a, you know, fun way to open the show before his, you know, monologue, which was probably average at best. But unless they're doing stuff like that, I really have no interest in a host, I guess.
Yeah, and I would love for them to at least, you know, give this maybe another run just like this next year. You know, everything that I've seen as far as the ratings go, it has been an increase over last year. Last year, I believe, were record lows as far as the Oscar viewership goes. So this year, it's an increase on that. And I mean, there's probably a bevy of factors for that, but I do think part of it is just people want to see how they would pull it off without a host. And again, I don't think the show misses a whole bunch with one. And you can tell if you watched it, there was a really concerted effort on, you know, maybe pulling back some of the excess stuff that they've been known for in the past, where you get, you know, random montages sometimes, just here's all the bank robberies that have ever been performed in movie history, or, you know, here's right. all the times where, you know, someone had kissed someone underneath these circumstances. We only got one of those, and that was at the beginning. They really just focused on 2018 movies. Anything from, like, Deadpool 2 to, like, Unsane to, you know, even some of the smaller movies, they all were kind of highlighted. But I thought that was a really, you know, direct focused on making the show a lot more trim. So I applaud them for that.
Okay. So as I mentioned, it was a, you know, unique year in which all the performers and artists that were up for Best Original Song got the chance to, you know, perform at the Oscars.
Yeah.
I did go out of my way to watch Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga do the performance of Shallow, since I'm obviously super high on A Star Is Born. And, man, they have, like, some serious going on, like, uncomfortable chemistry between them. Man, just... I read some articles. They're like, we feel bad for Irina, who's Bradley mm-hmm. Cooper's girlfriend, just with the looks that Lady Gaga was giving him. And, you know, I thought it was a good performance. I thought Bradley Cooper, you know, hard to say that he held his own compared to her, because she just blows everybody out of the water. But I thought he was pretty close to being on key. So I thought it was pretty cool that they did take the time to do that.
Yeah. I mean, you heard a couple of, like, you know, noticeable missed notes at the start, but, you know, Bradley Cooper himself is not a singer. And it's not like he went into this performance trying to do Jackson Maine. I think they did this bit too, like a couple of weeks ago. I think it was in Las Vegas, and neither of them, you know, reprised the characters in A Star Is Born. It was Lady Gaga, you know, as her Lady Gaga, but it was Bradley Cooper just, you know, singing as Bradley Cooper. He didn't do the Jackson Maine inflections or anything. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good performance. You know, like I said, some missed pieces here and there, but the chemistry, you know, exists whether they're in A Star Is Born or outside of it. I definitely think it was the best performance of the night. You know, they kicked it off with Queen and Adam Lambert, and, you know, I just wasn't really feeling that performance a whole bunch, and they had a couple other ones thrown in here and there that really didn't do anything for me. But yeah, I was into that Star Is Born you know, song there, and yeah, I mean, not much more to say about it, but I definitely think it was the high point of the production as far as just songs go.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like one of the high points of the night. I think another pretty high point of the night was Spike Lee finally getting his long-awaited Oscar, which I think that kind of dates back to Do the Right Thing, is when he was, you know, either snubbed or possibly snubbed for getting any love at the Oscars.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the running bit a lot of people have had is, you know, if you look at it, this probably isn't his strongest movie that he was he's been up for, but, you know, it's, I guess the time felt right for him to win it. So I thought it was a pretty good moment. I know some people, you know, he's very divisive to a lot of different people, but I thought it was a very cool moment, especially how Sam Jackson tied in, you know, the Knicks ending their 18-game losing streak or something. So it was a very cool moment.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. You know, Spike Lee ran up on stage and he jumped into Samuel L. Jackson's arms, which was really funny. So I definitely think that was probably one of the highlights of the night as well. There were certainly, I don't know if you'd call it lowlights or not, but yeah. some skepticism around. Should we dive into the main awards?
Yeah, we can go ahead and get into those for sure.
Well, unless you had anything else you wanted to knock out before we do.
Well, I guess for lowlights, I can't remember exactly the award that they won. I could probably pull it up here really fast, but Vice, it got only one award, I believe. It was for makeup and hairstyling, and the people who accepted it, Greg Cannon, Kate Bisco, and Patricia Dehaney, it was probably one of the worst acceptance speeches you will see in a long time. They're only one of three movies that were nominated, so you would think just by sheer logic they would have something planned just in case this would come up, because there's a strong idea they would come up and they would win. But they were just so all over the place, and it made no sense at all. Everyone seemed like they was trying to talk over each other, and you could get the feeling in the crowd it was awkward. Watching it was just as awkward, if not more so. That was a huge low light as far as just awards, acceptance speeches go.
Yeah. Gosh, if you don't have anything planned, just say thank you and get off the stage, I would think. just make it easy on yourself.
Yeah.
But, all right, well, with that, I think we can go ahead and dive into the major categories. Spike Lee, I read an interesting article about him that when they announced the best picture, he actually tried to walk out of the ceremony.
Yeah.
And the ushers shut him down at the back door.
Yep.
But I'm sure that most people can guess what would have caused that reaction from him. From a movie winning, it was obviously Green Book. Which, incited a lot of criticism when it won at the Globes. I was shocked to see this one win. I haven't seen the movie, but just based on the reaction that people had to it, it didn't sound like it was deserving. It sounded like a very questionable choice that was going to turn a lot of heads. And to go forward with it just makes me question if they were really looking to make the more controversial move. I don't know. I'm kind of, caught off guard by this.
Yeah, when they won at when it won the Globes, this became a very, very real shot that it would, take home Best Picture. It's won. It's picked up a couple different awards, across the circuit between then and now. I've seen the movie. At its core, I think it's fine. It got released around holiday season, and I talked about it before. I think it's definitely more of a feel good type of movie, but it's not something where, if you want really in-depth, facts, or if you want, super detailed character, expositions, or, character deep dives, you're not going to get that with Green Book. So Me Too, I expected this was probably going to happen, but for them to actually, do it, it's very questionable. The things I've kind of heard a lot is it's like a old Hollywood versus new Hollywood is things I'm hearing. So if everyone kind of recalls a couple years ago, you had the whole controversy about, Oscar so white, nothing that was done, I think, by a person of color even got nominated, whether it was right. Their best actor, best actress, best picture, you name it. There was just no representation of color there. I think the Oscars kind of heard that in some ways. And I do think they had made a little bit of an effort to include more diversity on their voting body. But with that said, I do think that this kind of choice, it kind of feels like this is a choice that maybe some older voters would have went for, because it's like something would have won 20, 30 years ago, but now kind of seeing it win, and we've got so much access to this and that, and how this isn't factual or why they go and do this decision. I just find it very, very puzzling. And again, I don't think it's a bad movie. I just find it puzzling. That's all.
Yeah. I want to say Spike Lee was upset because when he was up for Do the Right Thing, he got beat out by Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah.
And, this movie, not to say it's, a relatively similar vibe, but I thought that was kind of humorous that he said they were back at it again.
And just one bit about Spike, he's a very opinionated guy. I think he's a really good director in a lot of things. Other things I don't really care so much for him in. But me, myself, even if I was frustrated, I would think I would still kind of show the respect of, hey, I don't agree with this, but I'm just going to go ahead and, bite my tongue and just, the show's over at that point. How much how much more worse can it get sitting through like 2 or 3 minutes? But that's just my opinion.
No, I totally agree. It's not like, you know, the cast and crew of Green Book were, you know, making disparaging comments against his movie, or he'd really have any reason to walk out and protest.
Yeah.
If he wants to say a few things afterwards, you know, so be it. But pretty disrespectful to just get up and try to leave at the end of the award
right.
show.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
Well, staying with Green Book, Mahershala Ali took home Best Supporting Actor, which I think that was pretty much a lock, right?
I believe so. He won it at the Golden Globes too, which, again, you know, all of the controversy is tied in a lot to, you know, what is, what isn't real. The family themselves that, you know, is connected to Dr. Don Shirley has come out and said, you know, this relationship is not how it's being portrayed in the movie. I think he's great in the movie. I think Viggo's great in the movie. I thought he had a really good speech. You can tell, though, that it was, you know, it was very focused. It was very meticulous. It was very methodical, as opposed to maybe something that, you know, felt very genuine. I personally would have loved to see someone else win, only because Mahershala, again, a great actor, one of the best actors we've got today, just won a couple years ago, and I feel like he's got a lot more, you know, great performances ahead of him. And this is a good one, but, you know, compared to what he won for doing in Moonlight and what he's probably going to do, you know, as he's still a pretty young guy for all intents and purposes, what he's going to do in the future, I would have loved to see like a Sam Elliott win, or even or a Richard E. Grant or Adam Driver, you know, one of those guys. Definitely the latter two. The former two, Elliott and Grant. I mean, they're older. You know, you just don't know how many more opportunities they're going to get. Out of those five, I would love to see Elliott take home the gold on that.
Yeah, he's definitely who I was rooting for. You know, the A Star Is Born felt like such a natural fit for, you know, the character that he portrayed in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you really got to ask, like, how many more roles like that are going to roll out to Sam Elliott. I mean, honestly, I'd be shocked if he was nominated for another Oscar again. I didn't look at, you know, what his filmography looks like, but I don't even know if he's been nominated other times, so.
Yeah, I don't think – I think he has been, but, you know, he's 74 now. You know, I it's not like, you know, these roles are always going on trees, unfortunately, for, you know, older people. So, yeah, it's disheartening. You know, I remember when I saw, you know, the movie, and I was like, that's got to be a Best Supporting Actor role. And, you know, luckily it got it. It got snubbed at the Golden Globes, but at least he got nom. I just would have loved to see him win. And you're right. This is actually his first Academy nomination. So he probably won't get another one if we're being cynical about it.
I know, unfortunately. And you know what? The Oscars, they seem to have a kind of a knack for handing out, not to say undeserving Oscars, because Sam Elliott, for all intents and purposes, I think gave a tremendous performance that, you know, absolutely could have gotten an Oscar win. But if you look at, you know, certain actors pretty late in their career, Sean Connery in The Untouchables, Paul Newman in The Color of Money, John Wayne in True Grit, and I'm not you know, ripping apart any of those performances, but I know that some people may, or just may say that due to their age, you know, they had to get their, you know, their Oscar while they had the chance.
Yeah.
So I'm a little surprised that Elliott didn't get, you know, some more love in that regard.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I have no doubt that Mahershala was well deserving.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's a perfect segue to, you know, being, you know, well-deserved, or kind of being a makeup Oscar. We can see right into Best Actress, and, you know, Glenn Close was the favorite for The Wife, and actually she did not win. That win went to Olivia Colman for The Favorite. That's the one Oscar movie that I, the one Oscar Best Picture movie I'd missed, unfortunately, but, you know, I think a lot of people have the belief that Close was, you know, as close to sure money as it could get. I mean, I thought almost everyone in this category was good that I'd seen. But, you know, with Close, it kind of comes back to that Elliott argument. The only difference is Close has, you know, been nominated, I think, almost five times. But unfortunately, she has not taken home the honor either. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, Olivia Colman had a great speech, and, you know, she even low-key apologized to Olivia Colman or to Glenn Close about, you know, about winning. And Glenn Close, you know, kind of shunned her, like, oh, don't apologize. But, you know, you can kind of tell sometimes when you're looking just at their eyes, like, man, how many more opportunities am I going to get at this thing? I like to think with Close, I think she's got maybe at least a couple more really good roles ahead of her. I don't know what her age is off the top of my head. But still, you know, it's kind of, I'd say to me in a lot of ways, that was the biggest surprise of the night, along with editing. But as far as major categories go, I thought she was a lot because it's like, it's her time. She's 71. We've got to do it now. Or when are we going to do it if we don't do it?
Yeah, definitely a shock. And I want to say I saw that she's been nominated, you know, 7 times maybe.
Yeah.
Supreme confidence. She's probably got 1 or 2 more performances, if not more, in her that'll give her a shot at it. But, and you know, man, I look at a few older actresses. It seems like they're just timeless, and every year they could be up for it between like her and Helen Mirren and Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
They're going to, you know, keep popping out these kind of performances to the grave. But yeah, it was kind of a shame to see that she didn't bring that one home.
Yeah, that, and again, that, to me, that's probably the biggest surprise of the night. I guess another mild surprise, though. I had kind of prepared for just about everything this year after seeing the Golden Globes. To me, what would be Rami Malek winning for Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm a huge Malek fan. You know, I love Mr. Robot. One of my favorite shows going right now. Can't wait for the final season. But still, you know, with who was in that category and him, you know, this is the first time he's been nominated. It's the first time he's been invited to the Oscars. The thing I've just been heard a lot, and I can't say I disagree, is, you know, it just feels like it's too early for him. You know, that's my takeaway when I look at these, him versus the other 4 actors. I guess just because now Cooper's kind of been nominated a couple of times too. And I feel like he's had rightful claims to the throne. A lot of times he's been nominated. I would love to see a win for him. I thought Bale probably would have been the smart money, if not Malik. But, it's nothing against Malik. I like him a lot. I just feel like, you know, he's going to be doing this for a long time. He will have a couple different good roles to give. I don't know why there was a need to give him this Oscar in his first go.
Yeah, It was just such a unique year for Best Actor, where you've got 2 very heavily music, you know, inspired movies.
Yep.
And you've got 2 actors that, you know, are portraying lead singers. And I mean, not to oversimplify this, but at the end of the day, one guy sang his songs and the other didn't.
Yeah. And the crazy thing about it all was, you know, how every Oscar, you know, they show a snippet of a person having his Oscar moment. Rami's Oscar moment was him just like kind of playing on piano. I forget where it was in the movie, but he's obviously lip singing. He lip syncs in the movie. So it's not like they even picked a scene where, you know, he shows off a lot of range. It's just him lip syncing to something. And it's like, that's the moment you guys went with.
Yeesh. His Milli Vanilli moment was there. Their pick.
I think that was it. Yeah, yeah. He was, you know, getting his body into it all. And he had the physical part down. He had the gyrations, but that's the moment they went for as far as like his Oscar moment.
Yeah, they could have shown like when he was getting the band back together or when he was an emotional mess, you know, taking a bunch of drugs, which, you know, I thought he showed some definite range throughout the movie. But
I'm not mad he got nominated. I mean, he had some good moments in the movie, and I don't really like the movie a whole bunch, but, you know, I do not hate him in the movie. I think he's the strongest part of the movie. But yeah, they could have went with like 5 or 6 different moments compared to that one where, you know, he's just, you know, lip syncing and, you know, getting his body all into it. So that got dragged across the coals on Twitter and a lot of online stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, he had a good speech. You know, he's a good guy. He's a bright kid. He's very likable. I just would have loved to see one of these other people, anyone else but him, win it. Just because it just seemed like it's too early. That's all. That's just my opinion. But
no, I could not agree more. Just interesting one-off here. Did you happen to see how they did Freddie Mercury's voice for the movie?
No, I didn't.
they did a combination of Freddie Mercury's actual vocals and a YouTube singer.
Wow.
They had found this guy on YouTube that was apparently, like, he became a sensation, and he might have even joined a Queen, what do you call that when it's, like, they sing the songs of a, you know, band?
Cover?
Yeah, cover thank band? You. Okay. Yeah, he was, like, a Queen cover band, so they mashed his and Freddie Mercury's voice together, so I think that guy deserved a little bit of a call-out, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So.
Yeah, random knowledge, and I saw that Malik fell off the stage after he accepted his award.
So. I did not see it, but I heard of that too.
They took him to the hospital. So now that we're done tearing apart the fact that he won, we do send our best his way.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, and I think the last one we've got then is, I guess we have director and supporting actress. So I guess we'll go ahead and wrap up the acting portion. Regina King took it home for If Beale Street Could Talk. I don't think there's any surprise there, right?
No. I think this was, you know, preordained when she won for the Golden Globes. And, you know, everyone else, I can't really speak much for the favorite. I've just seen snippets. I know I like the movie. But, you know, with King, I definitely think she was the best part, of the best member of the cast acting-wise. Adams was typically solid. I feel like she's starting to also fall into that area with that Close and Cooper, have residence in where they've been nominated a couple times but haven't won. She had no shot, though. Marina Di Tavira, she's good. She's really good in Roma, but I never really saw her as a serious threat. So, you know, I would have been hugely surprised if anyone but King, you know, won for this award.
Yeah, same. There was just no buzz around anybody else really having a shot.
And that kind of goes the same for, you know, the last piece too, Best Director. I feel like Caron was earmarked from day one. If this is going to win anything, you know, if you had to bet your life on one award, it'd either be this one, Best Director, or Best Original Song, which obviously Star Wars won for Shallow. But yeah, you know, everyone else I see in this category, you know, had some good stuff. Again, missed the favorite, but saw a little bit of Cold War. Really good looking movie. Didn't do a whole bunch for me, but great looking movie. I love the stuff that Lee did in Klansman. I'm not so high on McKay's style in Vice. I liked it a lot more, and I thought it made a lot more sense in The Big Short. So yeah. I would love to see a lot of other different directors maybe get some due. Bradley Cooper, I feel like that was a good, you know, place to reward him. You know, yet again for A Star Is Born. But, yeah, again, no one stood a shot to Roma and Caron.
Yeah, no, he had that one locked up ever since the Globes. And with that, I think that kind of wraps up our Oscars recap. Did you have any other last-second notes you wanted to throw out there?
Not a whole bunch. You know, I guess at the start of the show, there was a lot of build towards, man, this could be Black Panther night, because Black Panther won a lot of early awards, including Best Costume Design, great acceptance speech by Ruthie Carter. They won Best Production, and it won Best Original Score, which I thought was mildly surprising, too. But as soon as we kind of got into some of the serious categories, or the bigger categories, let's say, all of them are serious, but the bigger categories, and, you know, things started going more towards Green Book and Roma, then you kind of felt like, okay, it really doesn't have much of a shot. But still, it won three awards. That's the second most any movie had won at the Oscars. Bohemian Rhapsody is top with four. And the biggest surprise, I guess this is honestly the biggest surprise. I know I talked a little bit about surprises, but, you know, it winning for best editing, I think, is also a massive shock, especially if you've seen that clip floated around the interwebs where, you know, they're meeting, the band is being introduced or getting ready to sign the contract. I forget where, but, you know, there's like a million different cuts in like 2 minutes. And it's like, this got nominated for best editing. I don't know how or why either, but the more I read into it, the more I hear it's just, well, they had all the issues with the director, Bryan Singer, and it's like they made a salvageable movie out of something that should have been trash. So, I guess that's why it won, but I don't know. I feel like there's many different movies that could have probably won the award and had a stronger claim to it.
Yeah, I thought it was a sloppy mishmash of a movie that shouldn't have been nominated in the first place.
Yeah.
So the fact that it won is just completely baffles me.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, one of a few surprises throughout the night. But I think you hit the nail on the head. That's probably the biggest one, with Glenn Close getting snubbed right after. Glenn Close getting snubbed right after that.
Right. And I think that's about it. You know, overall, I thought it was a solid year for movies. I would maybe put it at like a B- or C+. You know, I've definitely had more stronger years where, you know, there are like 4 or 5, maybe even 6 movies out of the 8 or 9 or 10 that, you know, I would love to see. I'd be okay with either of them winning. With this year, I'm like, these are good movies, but, you know, if you kind of put them against other years, they probably don't even sniff a nomination. So overall, I thought it was, I thought it was good to, you know, slightly above average year. And I would probably put it at about C+. So, you know, it definitely wasn't one of the stronger years by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm interested to see, you know, if 2019 comes back, you know, stronger, or if maybe, you know, we're in for like a little bit of an awards lull here, but we'll see. It's still kind of way too early to speculate.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're probably 1 or 2 powerhouse movies short of it being a, you know, really solid year at the Oscars.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look, one that immediately comes to mind that we were expecting big things from was First Man, and it just did not deliver. So I think once that one really, you know, fell short, everything kind of stumbled from there.
Right.
But so that'll do it for our 2018 Oscars recap. And with that, we will go ahead and pause for a second to hear about some friendly podcasts of ThatMomentIn.com.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
You are about to witness history in the making.
Hi there, this is Todd from Forgotten Films, and if you spend all your time watching new releases, then you need to broaden your movie horizons. And a great way to do that is by joining me for the Forgotten Filmcast. We don't talk about the new releases, we don't even talk about the classics. We talk about the movies that time forgot. On each episode, I'm joined by another film blogger to discuss a film that may or may not be worth rediscovering. So look for the Forgotten Filmcast on iTunes, Podomatic, and wherever you find great podcasts.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
In a world where podcasts already seem to address every imaginable subject, one man broke new ground with a seemingly random obsession about exploding helicopters in movies. He was a podcaster on the edge, a maverick broadcaster who played by his own rules. Now, he has a last chance to talk about the strange way helicopters explode in film. Exploding Helicopter, available on iTunes and Podomatic now. Think you know about chopper fireballs? Think again.
And we're back with Cinema Recap. We just wrapped up our run through the Oscars. And I think we're going to dedicate the second half of this to giving a little bit of a forecast for things to come in March.
Coming soon to theaters.
Before we do, I'm going to burn through the box office recap really quick just to let everybody know where the top 5 fell and what kind of numbers they put up domestically. Number 5, we had Isn't It Romantic with $7.1 million. Number 4, I think it was the official wide release of Fighting With My Family, which brought in $7.8 million. The Lego Movie Part 2, it's in its third week in the box office, down to 9.6 already, so just falling off the charts. Alita Battle Angel brought in another 12.3 in its second week, fell 56.7%. And At the top of the charts, we've got How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World with 55 million. I think this one opened a little stronger than we were expecting.
Yeah, it opened up a lot stronger than we were expecting. You went a lot more higher than I did. I think you went about 40, and I said something about 36. So we were both off, but, you know, by default, you were closer, you went higher, so you win. I think that kind of brings the overall yearly predictions to, like, 1-1. I know we've kind of been scattershot so far.
Oh, yeah, I was way off on the Lego movie a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, I we're starting to come back into some consistency as far as us getting these pods back. But, yeah, I think we're even now 1-1, but... Yeah, it surprised both of us. You know, I think we both had said we felt like there was a little bit of franchise fatigue, you know, just with this being the last movie. It's been 5 years since they completed the trilogy. So I wasn't really expecting huge numbers. Number one numbers for sure, but not huge numbers. But 55 million, yeah, caught my eye for sure. I mean, and I guess it when I really boil down to it, it makes sense. You know, it's pretty good. IP, the first two movies have amazing reviews, taken really good on Rotten Tomatoes, and this one's at 92% right now. So, yeah, you know, when you add those up together, it's simple math. I can see how it kind of got to 55 million. It surprised me, but when I really, you know, distill the elements down, then it shouldn't be that surprising.
Yeah, I think... I mean, we obviously both knew it was going to be the number one, but kind of nice to see it open stronger than we were expecting. My hope is this is just, you know, nicer weather's coming. You know, people aren't stuck indoors from the crazy polar vortex that might have been trapping them inside for the past few weeks. And people are ready to get out there and hit the cinema again. So hopefully it's a sign of good things to come. And with that, we'll go ahead and move into March. And unfortunately, I don't think anything's really coming out the first weekend.
There's one movie that I've got a little bit of interest in. I've only seen the trailer once, which is fine by me. I'm not a huge, you know, trailer guy. But there's a movie called Greta that's coming out that's like a drama thriller. I guess it's maybe a little bit of horror as well, starring Chloe Grace Moretz, Micah Marrone, Isabel Huppert. And to be honest, I can't even clearly say what it's about. I just know, like, man, for whatever reason, the trailer caught my eye. This woman finds this, like, handbag, and she returns it to this person named Greta. And, you know, there's some other stuff that goes on, and they strike up a friendship. But, of course, some weird stuff starts happening. Frances, played by Chloe Grace Moretz again, starts to figure out, you know, some of the... things that this Greta person's known for, and, you know, really starts to get put off by it. And, you know, is it too late? Has she opened up Pandora's box? So, you know, sounds pretty basic, but also sounds kind of interesting. So I've got a little bit of intrigue as to what's the mystery on this one.
Okay. Just reading a quick review. So a few words that pop out are very twisted, crazy, and totally demented. So that'll catch my eye.
Yeah, so I don't know if any of us is going to cover that. If it comes to my theater or somewhere around me, I wouldn't mind tackling it and seeing and maybe giving my thoughts about it. But yeah, I think that's the only piece that comes out this Friday. You've got Tyler Perry retiring his Madea character in a family funeral. I've just never really had any interest in him playing Madea. I actually think he's a better actor than people give him credit for when he's not directing his own stuff, or, you know, he's underneath the direction of, like, another director. Like, he was really good, in my opinion, in Gone Girl.
I loved him in Gone Girl. I thought he was great.
And he's pretty good in Vice, too. I think he's actually one of the stronger performances in Vice. He's Colin Powell. But, yeah, his... I saw the first Madea, and that was, like, the only one I needed to see. I guess when you have, like, 8 or 9 of these, it's probably the best one, but I've never really revisited his stuff before. So I'm happy to have him, you know, finally retire it and just, you know, go do something else. He's a competent director, too, just not when he's doing these movies. So I will not be seeing this, but I'm happy to see him retire it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a total cash grab for him, and I'm sure the you know, royalties from the franchise he can live off of for the rest of his life, so I can't knock him for doing it, despite the fact that I'll never watch one of these movies.
Yeah, I can't either. Not for me, but, you know, they do hit a certain market, and, you know, we know what that market is. If you kind of boil it down, African-American people do go out and see that movie. I'm not one of them. I'm just not a fan of that. But I'm happy to see him just do other things. So that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, I'd like to see him continue his acting chops with some more serious roles and, you know, maybe even get some Academy love one day.
Right, yeah.
Well, the week after, it's going to be the biggest, well, maybe not. What I think is probably going to be the biggest release in March is Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
We've got Brie Larson in the lead role. Sam Jackson and Jude Law are going to be starring beside her. This is going to be the last Marvel movie that opens before Endgame comes in April. So I think it's really out there to whet the appetite for all the Avengers fans who, you know, are just counting down the days and hours and minutes until the finale comes. So this one, it's going to put up huge numbers, no doubt. Personally, Mark, I don't love what I've seen in the trailer. I think it looks a little hokey and I don't know. I'm just having trouble buying into it. It looks too like outer space alien-esque, and
yeah,
it doesn't have the total Avengers vibe. I guess Thor has that, you know, in that same regard. So maybe that's what they're playing off of. But
right.
What are your initial thoughts here?
Yeah, I don't know if this is the exact word, but for whatever reason, I don't know. I don't feel a lot of like groundedness, you know, to the movie that I kind of like out of some of my Marvel movies, like, you know, Captain America, or, I mean, I know technically Thor is, you know, he's a demigod, but I still feel like he can assimilate, you know, in that world we don't know about, but also kind of come down to Earth and, you know, not feel so completely foreign. But yeah, I'm going to watch it, obviously, but I just don't have tons of, you know, massive hype for it. I think my main excitement is just seeing how this propels, you know, us into Infinity War or Endgame. That's really my main excitement in this, because otherwise, like, I don't know. Yeah, we've seen the trailer enough. The core story, the Krull or the Krill, I might be getting that wrong. I don't know. But it just doesn't do a whole bunch for me. And I like Brie Larson. Samuel Jackson's, you know, fine. But yeah, I just struggle to get really, really pumped for this one. And I don't know if it's, you know, simple franchise superhero fatigue, or I just think it's the latter. It's just sometimes some stories don't do it for you, and I don't know if this is going to be one that is really going to get my my gears turning. But I'd love to see how this does propel us into Endgame.
I almost want to just watch the post-credit scenes.
I
feel like that's probably going to give away how it plays into Endgame, you know, whether she gets hit by the snap or if she's going to be a major player in things to come. So definitely curious in that regard. I just don't know if I need to sit through 2 hours of the movie to find out.
Right, I'm with you.
But
normally these, yeah, I will too. I mean, normally these movies go at least about 2 hours. So, I don't know. It's coming. I'm just not necessarily looking really forward to it. But I'm gonna watch it. We'll both have, you know, thoughts about it, and you know, we can go from there. But yeah, I'm much, much more excited to see how this gets us to Endgame.
Yeah, I'm curious to watch this bus scene that they keep marketing so hard, where Brie Larson just beats the hell out of some old lady on a bus. So
right.
We'll see what comes out of that. A limited release is coming on March 13th for Triple Frontier on Netflix. Have you seen anything about that?
I have seen the trailer here and there, like the minute TV trailers. So I forgot that was coming. I feel like every month now we get something on Netflix, which, you know, isn't bad. I would love to start seeing them turn in, you know, more movies that, you know, have a higher, I don't know, like rate, or, you know, Rotten Tomato fresh rate, I guess. But no, I've seen it. You know, I think you and I both like, you know, gritty crime, you know, thriller dramas. So I haven't seen much of it since probably they had like a Super Bowl spot, I want to say. But yeah, good old reminding me, because I totally forgot this was coming.
Yeah, it's five former Special Forces operatives are reuniting to plan a heist in a sparsely populated multi-border zone of South America.
Yeah.
That's kind of the general premise, but what really gets me on this one is the cast. It is just dynamite. You got Ben Affleck, Charlie Hunnam, Pedro Pascal, who I love. Big Game of Thrones guy, so really excited to see him getting some more movies. Oscar Isaac and Garrett Hedlund. Maybe a couple of those guys aren't household names for everybody out there, but mm-hmm. I mean, for you and I think we know those guys pretty darn well, and I'm excited to see all of them together.
I'm with it. And you said that's Thursday? Thursday the 11th?
I think it's Wednesday.
Wednesday
the 13th.
Okay.
So nice little great.
Midweek break, break up the hump day in the midweek.
Don't even have to leave your house, man. Just do some Netflix from the couch.
Nice.
And then later that week, Friday, March 15th, man, honestly, anything stick out to you that's coming out that? Oh, you know what? Captive State's coming out. You're pretty excited for that one, right?
Yeah, I am. When we did the first pod of the year way back when, and we kind of delved into movies that maybe weren't obvious, but we were still semi-excited for, Captive State was mm-hmm. one of them. I don't think we might have gotten like a full trailer for it at some point, but I keep on just kind of coming back to like that teaser one. I haven't really delved into the actual full on trailer. I've seen enough. Like, I'm interested. Rupert Wyatt is directing it. It's got a really good cast, within it, starring John Goodman, one of the teen kids from Moonlight, Ashton Sanders, Vera Farmiga, even Machine Gun Kelly is in the movie too. But I'm more interested, just in the overall direction. I like a really good sci-fi. I feel like I've gotten a lot of different inklings and tones of different things, with the movie. So yeah, it doesn't seem like it's going to get a massive release compared to some of the other things on this list, but it'll probably be the thing that I go out to see first immediately.
Yeah, I think it's definitely got that sleeper potential for, like a District 9 type, one of the better movies of the year that you didn't see coming.
Yeah, it's got that vibe. And normally, with sci-fi, sci-fi just doesn't really do a whole bunch of big numbers anymore at the box office. I think you really have to have like a known quantity for people to get into it. I mean, it's a different type of sci-fi, but go back to The Edge of Tomorrow like 4 or 5 years ago, and that was a summer movie, and it was a really, really good movie, but not a lot of people went to see it for a myriad of reasons. But Tom Cruise is in it, Emily Blunt. It was a summer movie, but it really didn't do a whole bunch of numbers. And I just don't know if people really care to try to wrap their brains around, sci-fi or even anything that they're not remotely kind of sure about. I'm not one of those people, but, I think a lot of people kind of trend towards being the former.
Yep. No, for sure. But, at least we're excited for it.
Yeah.
And also coming out with a limited release on Netflix, I believe, that Friday is going to be The Highwaymen. Have you seen anything for this one?
I have not, so you would have to lead the way on this one.
I was rather surprised when I saw a trailer pop up on IMDb out of nowhere, and which kills me because one of my favorite actors is in it. But the premise is a pair of police officers come out of retirement to catch the infamous outlaws Bonnie and Clyde. Hmm. And that pair of police officers are Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner, who's my guy. So the fact that I didn't know about this one I feel ashamed almost. But regardless, I'm pumped. I like what I see in the trailer. I'm certainly a little concerned that it's a Netflix release just because they haven't had the best luck with movies. But regardless, I'm all in. I know what I'm doing that Friday.
Well, yeah, I had no idea this was coming. So I'd be interested to hear your brief thoughts on it.
Yeah, unless somebody beats me to the punch, it's definitely one that I'll be happy to do a write-up of. So
cool.
More to come. And then let's see, the following weekend, March 22nd, we've got what's probably the biggest thriller / horror or most hyped in that genre coming out in Us, which is the follow-up to Get Out by director I'm drawing a blank, so I'm thinking of Keegan-Michael Key.
Jordan Peele.
Thank you. I'm pretty pumped for this one. What are your thoughts here, Mark?
Yeah, I am. I really like the trailer. I don't want to say love. There are some things that, you know, kind of stand out and like, I don't know if I all the way down with it, but, you know, just off the great will that he built with Get Out, I mean, it's only taken one movie, but, you know, he's already established himself as one of the more original, you know, writers and directors that we have, and, you know, even doing his Key and Peele stuff, like, they were very original with a lot of their sketches. So absolutely, I'm all the way in. I think he's talked a little bit about some of the movie where it's not going to be, it's not really going to have the same tone, per se, as Get Out. It's going to have probably, I mean, it's going to make you laugh, I think, here and there, but it's not going to be like, you know, maybe a holding up a racial mirror or a racial criticism of, you know, this and this in the United States. I've heard he's doing something a lot different, you know, with that. So, you know, I love that he's keeping his ideas fresh and he's, you know, going to be tackling different things. I don't know exactly what those things are, but as he said, that an inspiration for him was, you know, the Twilight Zone, what he's actually going to be, you know, rebooting, mm-hmm. I think, this year. So, yeah. I'm all the way in. We'll probably have some sci-fi elements, maybe. Definitely going to be psychological. Can't wait. It's going to be, the second biggest movie of the month. I think you were maybe contemplating on whether this could be the biggest one. I don't think it's going to overtake Captain Marvel, but, I mean, it's going to be it's going to do a lot of money.
Actually, a different movie I was thinking of that could be the biggest one. I'll get to that in 1 second. But yeah, I feel like Us has definitely a darker, maybe even a little bit scarier, you know, tone to it mm-hmm. than what we got from Get Out, which, I love scary movies, so I can't wait to see, you know, what Jordan Peele's got up his sleeve for this one.
Yeah, and just the lead characters themselves, Lupita Nyong'o, I mean, she's won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave, and obviously she was great in Black Panther. She can carry a lot of scenes and carry a lot of moments in a movie. But Winston Duke, also in Black Panther, you know, he was in M'Baku. You know, I know he stole the show in a lot of different scenes that he was in, so I'm happy to see him get a really expanded opportunity to showcase himself as a leading man. So, yeah, nothing but excitement for this movie.
Yeah, everything's looking good so far. Checks all the boxes. And in the last weekend of the month, we've got the Disney classic Dumbo coming out. So this is going to be the first Disney feature of the year in a huge year of Disney live-action movies. That's going to include Lion King and Aladdin as well. Mark, I feel like this one could open really big, man.
I don't know, man. It's directed by Tim Burton, music composed by Danny Elfman. I guess it could be. I'll be honest. I really haven't seen any trailers for this. I know we've had a couple. I don't know. There's something about it where I really think that the reviews have to be pretty good. Otherwise, I could see this maybe having a really good first week, but maybe falling off, you know, rather quickly. I haven't taken a look immediately as to what's coming after that, but, you know, we're going to start, come April, I mean, we're going to get some really, really, you know, big movies that first weekend of April, and we're not going to talk about those now. We'll save that for another pod, but I don't know. I guess I'm a little more measured. I'm not going to commit and say it's going to do big numbers, but what makes you think that it has a really big number potential?
How much clout the Disney franchise has with some of these remakes, and the more I talk about it, now I'm kind of remembering like the Snow White movie and Cinderella that didn't really open that great. But I mean, Beauty and the Beast came out, 2 years ago and put up over $1 billion. So
that's a good point. And it's not like this has been done so many times. I mean, I'm sure if you look at or you find, you know, DVD or VHS, you know, interpretations, but it's not something where I feel like we've gotten it every 20 years. The only one I can immediately remember is 1941, and I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't see that, but, you know, whenever I think of Dumbo, I kind of think of that, you know, old school cartoon. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are probably going to be seeing this for the first time, and There will maybe be some novelty, but there will probably be a lot of, wow, this is kind of original, but it's Disney, so let's check it out. So I can kind of see your thinking in that too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Tim Burton directing it's going to draw in a little bit of the older crowd, whereas, you know, the Disney appeal and, you know, the fact that it's, a baby elephant with giant ears will really pander to the younger children that'll want to drag their parents to it. So I feel like it's got some serious potential to be the second biggest and maybe even a sleeper for the biggest release of the month.
Yeah.
But I'm probably just setting myself up for like the biggest bomb of the month at this point.
Oh, you know, sometimes you gotta ride with what you believe in, and you know, I'm taking a look at some of these stills, and you know, if this is gonna be a big movie, like I could see, you know, Dumbo, every little kid, you know, saying, "Mom, Dad, buy me Dumbo." Like I could see him being like one of the key, you know, pieces of the year. I know we've got The Lion King. I know we've got Aladdin coming up. I think you and I already talked a little bit about Aladdin, and you and I have also gone on in the past about how, you know, these live-action reboots that Disney have done, they're not, like, bulletproof by any stretch of the imagination. I feel like for every good one, there's been an equally bad one. And yep. If you've got three this year, I just think, you know, numbers say one of them is going to be bad. From what we've seen just so far, Aladdin's not looking strong. Maybe Dumbo, you know, surprises, and it's kind of good. I struggle to see the Lion King kind of just dropping the ball, but I think about it, I think you're right.
I think Aladdin's going to be the most controversial of the three. I think Dumbo's a little under the radar right now, which is probably, you know, might even play to its benefit, so it's not going to pull in any, you know, questionable or bad press. Whereas, I mean, Lion King, it is going to murder it.
Yeah.
I think it'll be the biggest of the three, no doubt. But
Think about it, that elephant, man, just looking at that elephant looking back at me, like, it's going to garner some emotion. So,
yeah, you know, adorable elephant.
Never underestimate that.
Yep. and otherwise, there's going to be one other limited release in The Beach Bum. Matthew McConaughey is playing a beach bum stoner. Got a pretty unique cast, including Snoop Dogg, Isla Fisher, Zac Efron, Jonah Hill. I'm not going to get into too much detail about this one, but I'm not even sure what the whole plot entails. But great cast. I'm sure it's going to be kind of a goofy comedy. So I'm not sure if you've seen too much about that one, Mark, but I think that's one that I'll give a watch.
I remember vaguely seeing a trailer, and you know, this is it's got a pretty hefty cast. Let's see McConaughey do something good, because I feel like it's been a long time since done something that's kind of been wow. You know what? He had the McConaughey a couple of years ago, but I feel like, you know, it's been nothing but really, you know, bad or meh movies since then. I hope this surprises. You know, it's probably not going to do a whole bunch. I could probably see it doing under 10 million, and you know, no one really giving it much of a look. But I'll be interested to hear your thoughts. If I have some downtime, maybe I'll check it out too. We can both chat about it. But I do remember seeing the trailer. I don't remember a whole bunch sticking out. I just remember Matthew McConaughey looking kind of goofy, and you know, I was like, I don't know where this is going. This is kind of like a Spring Breakers-ish movie, or if it's just like a straight comedy. I don't know, but I do like some of the characters. I do like some of the cast members in it.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's just kind of a, you know, small, lovable stoner film, and maybe even channel some of his inner Wooderson again. Goes back to his Dazed and Confused days.
Ah, yeah.
But, I think that'll wrap up our run through of what March has in store. I know we are pretty tight on time here, but Mark, any last second thoughts or anything you got coming out this week?
I know we chatted a little bit about it last week. I'm going to definitely get something up for what to watch. You know, it's baseball season. I will be covering a baseball movie. I just had time run kind of short this week, and I had to finish the Isn't It Romantic piece that's on thatmomentin.com right now. But I will definitely get to a what to watch this week. And I'm going to try. I'm not going to commit, but I'm going to try to get to Greta. And if I don't have something posted by it, hopefully I can at least maybe talk about it the next time we do a pod.
All right. Sounds good. And I think I'll try to get a what to watch for March released sometime this week. Just almost, I guess, essentially kind of a recap of what we just discussed today. And let's see. Otherwise, I know we're trying to incorporate, or at least, you know, I was hoping we could incorporate kind of like a little you know, personal movie question into every episode.
That's
I
right.
I think we'll postpone that to next episode, just since we did run a little bit long here with the Oscars and the March run through. But by no means has that been forgotten.
No means. I will come back with a question next week. So, yeah, it's not been forgotten. It's been a very, very stacked week, and happy to do it.
And yeah, we'll be back in business come next week.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of Cinema Recap. But we do appreciate you guys joining in, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.